Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event June 21st at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our presenters, Laura Albert. Laura is an Associate Professor of Industrial and Systems Engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Laura will deliver a talk titled Forecasting the College Football Playoff Using Markov Chains. Laura, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for joining me. So let's just get started with how I start with everybody. Tell me a little bit about your background. You're heavily involved with operations research, and I know that you've done work in homeland security and emergency response issues. What led you to those areas to study?
Yeah, so first of all, I have a degree in industrial engineering. I am an engineer, and I started my research early on in homeland security. So I started a PhD program in September 2001, and I happened to start working with my advisor, who was like the only person studying aviation security before September 11th, and just had this great opportunity to get involved in understanding policies that would help us do risk-based security that would help us use our limited resources wisely and also improve security. And then later on, I was just very interested in public programs and public sector operations research and got involved in emergency medical services. I've worked extensively with local fire and EMS departments on better responding to 911 calls. And it's been a lot of fun. So I hope my research makes a real difference. And that's something that's always motivated me and near and dear to my heart.
Well, definitely. Go back to what you just said earlier, though. There was only one person studying aviation security before 9/11.
There's only one, but it was not a hot topic. And he happened to get involved with somebody. You know, Al Gore was this visionary on security. There were aviation security issues more internationally, but in the 90s, at the time, the airlines themselves had to pay for security, and there wasn't a lot of interest, and there wasn't a lot of interest in Congress to actually fund more security measures. It was just anticipated that would slow things down. But there was a movement with Al Gore, and then some of the airlines were able to do very limited screening, but it was very targeted and risk-based, and they screened just checked bags for explosives, and then that those ideas were really applicable after September 11th with the myriad of security challenges that kind of came to the forefront.
Wow, that's amazing to consider, but all very believable now that when we trace back 17 years ago. But wow.
It is, yeah. It was great to jump into a project like that that's so cutting edge with somebody who had a lot of the background and could get me up to speed really quickly.
Sure. Okay, so what led you to incorporate sports into your teaching and research?
Just kind of a passion and an interest in it. I grew up outside of Chicago, and I'm a diehard Chicago sports fan. It's my tribe. So I grew up with Michael Jordan and the 85 Bears, and I really had it pretty good. And then grew a love for college sports later on. And I actually wanted to learn a little bit more about kind of the data analytics side and the data side. My early research at Homeland Security, we didn't have data. Terrorist events are really rare. And we were doing more policy development and developing policy insights and focusing more on the optimization and the analysis and the models. And so it really was a way for me to work with data a little bit, which I've done a lot on the emergency medical service side. I look at so much 911 call data, but it's very different than the kinds of questions we might look at in sports. And I just needed some time to kind of sit down with something. I think football always interested me. I never got into baseball statistics when I was younger. I know that's heresy to admit that, but I came into it as an adult in other means. And I was just kind of interested in like how you could, at some point, just how would you like rank college football teams? And it's sort of a simple question. But the season is so short, and it just boggles my mind that you can do that with math pretty well. And so that's one of the things I had, where I really got started in doing sports analytics, and what I'm known for right now is really kind of the college football playoff and how do we rank the sports teams, and then how do we forecast where they'll be to gain a further insight about who might make it to the playoff based on their schedule of play, but also their future schedule of play.
Let's just get right into that then. I mean, that will be the topic of your talk at our conference. Again, that topic is forecasting the college football playoff using Markov chains. Taking a step back, you know, those rankings, and they've been around in various iterations even before the college football playoffs. We had the bowl championship series and things like that. And they've always been heavily scrutinized, right? And whether there was a large human element, whether it be polling, whether it's the computer rankings, quote unquote, whereas now it's a selection panel. Talk a little bit about that and what your observations were, your probably critiques of how that's been handled over the years. What have they gotten right? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt that some of it may have been right over the years. Yeah. But primarily, you know, what's been flawed about that methodology that the powers that be in college football have used?
Well, I mean, so like my meta comment on that is, before I jump into the specific methodology, I mean, one of the challenges with college football was that there were only two teams in the National Conference Championship game, and now there's four. So as an operations researcher, I'm always focused on how to, you know, use our limited resources well. And it's really tough when resources are very limited. And in this case, it's those slots into the playoff. The playoff used to be a single game. And there was the sort of underlying assumption when they had the national championship game that there were exactly two teams that were like the quote unquote right teams to make it into the playoff. And I just think that was fundamentally a flawed assumption. Now, is four right? I think four is getting closer, and that there's probably a small number of teams that really could make a case for being the best. And that number is going to vary year to year, but I think four at least gives us enough wiggle room to at least get it right. And I think get it right really is about letting those teams into the playoff, the right teams into the playoff, in kind of whatever order. I'm a little less worried about the order in the seedings, because if you get in, you have a chance. And if you don't get into the playoff, you have no chance. And that's the real line that is pretty important there. So that's kind of my meta discussion about it. And I think that it's been a lot better with the college football playoff. And I noticed that there was this fundamental change in philosophy right away that I thought was interesting. So when you only had the two teams in, it was, you know, a team that maybe had a weak schedule, but it was in a major conference and went undefeated would automatically get that, be selected. And the first year they did the playoffs with a human selection committee. And I love number crunching a lot. And I was a little wary of the human selection committee, but I think humans can make good decisions too, especially when informed with good numbers. But they did, there was the one undefeated team, I believe it was Florida State, and they got the 3 seed, if I remember correctly. They were not the top seed. And I thought that was a good change in the right direction, and that it's really not, you know, rankings versus people making decisions. It's kind of the system that kind of informs that committee. And so it all comes together and gets the teams into the playoffs. And I thought that was pretty promising, at least the first year, of that they were really trying to rank the teams according to who they really thought was best, not who really just deserved to get in. And that's a subtle difference. But
yeah, and yet this whole process is full of subtle differences and changing criteria, right, seemingly changing from week to week, sometimes year to year. But I don't want to go down that. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole as much as I find it interesting.
I do too.
I just thinking about the bowl championship series, you know, I was just looking at the history of it, how many different computer rankings. And again, that's a very simplistic way of calling, you know, what, you know, the data and the data informed way of ranking these teams. They use at any time 3 to 6, maybe different ranking systems that were done that way. When did you get involved with starting your own rankings and with your own methodology, and how did you, think that those compared to the rankings being used officially?
Well, it's really interesting because a lot of the official rankings being used are not available. I mean, I don't really know how they work. I know how the Kali matrix works.
Yeah.
So I'm all a fan of keeping everything open and available. I got started in 2014 with the first college football playoff. Okay. Somebody here at the university just asked me, like, hey, you should get started and do something for that. I'm like, that's a great idea. And it was the beginning of the summer. I'm like, I'll just tool around and see what I can figure out. So I don't have history that goes really far back in there. But it's been pretty interesting to see. I look at a lot of the rankings now, and I look at, you know, Ken Massey has a nice clearinghouse of all the rankings. I can see how I stack up. And it's really interesting that people can have all types of different methodologies in their math-based rankings. And somehow some weeks we all agree that a certain team is underrated or overrated. Uh-huh. And it seems like it's very collective. And it's very interesting when that differs from like the human collective, especially late in the season when there's some more data points. So I think in the first college football playoff, the Big 12 was left out. And I noticed that was fine according to my rankings. And I noticed that was kind of a similar thing. The Big 12 was just not as good as the other conferences that year. And at least that's what the math showed. And a lot of the experts sort of disagreed. And that's just one example, but it's been kind of interesting, at least looking not just at my own rankings, but others.
And thinking back to that year, if my memory serves, because it's painful, Ohio State was the one who jumped those two Big 12 teams because they beat our University of Wisconsin by 190 points or whatever it was in the Big Ten championship game. Yeah. And the thought was that those style points that they got for beating a good Wisconsin team so convincingly was enough to jump them over the Baylor and TCU teams that had been slugging out in the Big 12. But you're saying that even taking those style points out of the equation, that Ohio State deserved to be in that first year. That
I had them ranked fourth.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not talk about that ever again, all right?
All right, agreed. That was a rough game.
So I'm looking at your blog right now, the Badger Bracketology blog, which, you know, bracketology, we're used to hearing that used in basketball terms, but you also do football rankings. And if I'm interpreting this right, on December 3rd, 2017, Selection Day, your rankings went Clemson 1, Georgia 2, Oklahoma 3, Wisconsin 4. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that is after Ohio State beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game?
Yep, exactly. Okay. Wisconsin had one close loss to a great team. Mm-hmm. And mathematically, they're way up there. I can see why a human would have a hard time putting them in the playoff, because that game counts more than the others.
Sure. And yet, you know, eventual national champion Alabama is ranked seventh here. And again, there was a lot of criticism of the committee ranking Alabama ahead of Ohio State too, because Alabama's schedule was weaker. How do you explain that? How do you explain the differences between what your methodology mm-hmm. yielded and what the committee decided?
Yeah, this is the first year I had one team off. So that was really interesting. One of the things that's showed up consistently in the rankings with a short football season is, especially when I'm looking at the forecasts, that ability to get to the conference championship game is so critical in determining who really has a chance. And so I had Alabama ranked way up there the whole season, and then they lost a game and really lost, you know, the ability to go to the SEC championship game. And that's what plummeted them in the rankings, especially at the end. But it was really, they were ranked high, but you could see I have a forecast ranking, which is different than just the regular ranking, which is like the now cast. And that said, okay, they're ranked maybe third, but they really have a very small chance of getting into the playoff, mainly because they'll miss out on this one extra game. And that one extra piece of data, when you have so few data points over the season in terms of actual games played, really helps kind of cement who's the best. And you're trying to pick out these outliers in the distribution. And as the season goes on, there's, you know, most teams we can rule out of having any chance, or just whittling away who's available, and having one more convincing data point is usually is enough to get into the playoffs.
And I think a lot of people would agree with that. A lot of people think that teams that don't make their conference championship game should not be eligible to make the playoff. And then there's been conferences like, I think the Big 12 added that championship game to provide, you know, as you just termed it, another data point for the selection committee. So I think they're similar. So without going too much into the details,
I will add one thing on there, because this, I got it off a little bit, but if I were on the committee this year, I would have, you know, chosen those first three teams. And I know I had Wisconsin fourth, but for me, that was the sign that I thought Central Florida should have gotten the invite over Alabama. But, you know, the committee members can disagree with me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So talking about your talk, using Markov chains to forecast this, explain that to me. Explain to somebody like me who may not be intimately familiar with Markov chains and that methodology.
Oh, sure. So this is exciting because I teach Markov chains in the classroom, and I love being an educator and I love sports analytics and I love when it all comes together like this. But it's a mathematical model that helps us understand how a system evolves over time. So it's used to model like the stock market, the spread of disease and epidemiology. And specifically in this case, we move in our mathematical model from state to state. And in this case, that means we move team to team. And so two teams are connected if they play each other. And the idea is that so we have the structure. You're only connected to the 11 or 12 other teams that a team may play. And so there's a lot of structure there with the conference games. But you move to the teams that you vote for them and you vote for the teams that beat you, typically in the most simple case of the model. And so if we were to move from team to team to team and just do that like millions and millions of times across these 118 teams, we'll visit them all multiple times. But we'll tend to move and visit the teams that win a lot more often than the teams that lose a lot, just because there's more incoming links to the winning teams. And the really good teams like Wisconsin and Alabama that win a lot of games against really good teams, we move there the most frequent. And so we measure like that fraction of time we spend visiting the teams, and that helps me rank the teams and come up with a score about how really strong that team is.
And this seems like a very logical approach to use when you're comparing different teams from different regions of the country. There's very little overlap, correct, in the schedules that these teams play. I mean, there are very few common opponents. And if you're trying to weigh the relative quality of, again, an Alabama versus an Ohio State for that fourth spot, there are very few commonalities there, right? So this, mm-hmm. this seems to address that, correct?
This seems to address that, and I don't have a formula for strength of schedule. It's all computed endogenously by the model, and it looks at basically how good are these teams that you beat. And my model has some bells and whistles where I assign partial votes, and then a winning team can vote for a team that it beats, but it all sort of works out in the long run.
Okay. I first became aware of you, Laura, I think it was reading in an alumni magazine, actually about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And it was an article about your bracketology blog. And I believe that the focus of that was on the basketball work that you were doing. Talk about any of the similarities and differences in what and how this applies to basketball.
I use the similar model for men's basketball. I don't have rankings for women's basketball yet. That's a work in progress. But I do use the data from football versus basketball. So there are some differences in kind of the secret sauce. And basically, I just fine-tune the model based on the data I have for that sport. And there's many more college basketball teams. And the invitation to the college basketball tournament is much different than in football. There's 68 openings. There's a lot of automatic bids. So I don't really look at the forecasting aspect of that. I really just look at the now ranking and the now cast.
Okay. Tell me about the role your students have in maintaining this blog and I guess more importantly, the rankings that go into it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I will say that mostly it's me that runs it. And I have some students every year that kind of come and go. So I'm kind of the rock that has to keep this all going. And it's been fun to have some students involved. I've had a couple students look at some issues of how we could apply this to other sports along the way. But I do like to teach with it in the classroom because I teach a course in stochastic processes where we talk about Markov chains, teach undergraduate simulation. And I had taught a course on sports analytics. And so, the methods I find, I can sort of work it into a number of the courses that I teach, and it's kind of exciting. And I recently went to a graduation we had for the LEADS program here. And so it's Leaders in Engineering Education and Diversity. And, one of the students talked about picking his major because he heard me talk in a freshman course on bracketology and thought it was cool that you could use industrial engineering for all sorts of things. And so that's really the role of the students, is hopefully to inspire them to have the next great idea after they graduate. And it starts, if sports is the hook, then that's great.
That's 100% why we're doing this conference too, Laura. So that's that's great. And I've heard that story before, and I hope to hear it again. So You know, you talked about the next idea. What is your next idea for sports analytics? And you know, actually, I'm interested in hearing what your other ideas are for research or further investigation in analytics in general.
I'm hoping to have some students help me take the rankings and look at other sports, especially women's sports. I think they're so often overlooked. And when you start doing sports analytics, one of the things that was really surprising is it's very difficult to get a lot of data for women's sports. I wanted to look at volleyball rankings because I happen to enjoy following college women's volleyball. And it was just hard to get data that's not aggregated and put in nice stored on all these various websites where I can find it in the form I need rather quickly. So that was, you know, one of my challenges. I haven't looked at things for like World Cup yet. I probably won't unless I have a student that's very motivated. I kind of prioritize, I think, college sports being at a university.
Sure.
So that's what's going on there. And in the rest of my research looks very different. I built a lot of typically optimization models to inform a lot of public decisions. I have a lot of research going on in cybersecurity and in emergency response now, both to routine emergencies and to severe emergencies, kind of post-disaster settings. And some of that research focuses on, well, how do we perform emergency response while we're also restoring a network. So the network itself is changing in a fundamental way, and maybe we can even influence how that changes. And that's been an exciting topic. And some of my other research in that area focuses on how do we best match different types of service providers to patients, emergency patients in real time. It becomes much more challenging when we're looking at getting the right mix right for a patient.
That's fantastic work. Thank you for doing that. What advice would you have for a student or a young academic who's looking to get involved in one of these fields that you're involved in?
Well, in terms of analytics, there's so much opportunity to get involved. I think just talking to professors is the advice I would have for students, and try to check out some blogs. I'm also involved in Informs, so go to informs.org for a lot of resources, because a lot of students don't really know about operations research so much. And a lot of students who are interested in analytics think typically of statistics and the more data science instead of the, well, what are you going to do with it? How do you actually design a system, which is where I'm generally more interested in. In terms of getting involved in sports analytics, I would say just jump right in. There's data, but it helps to have a specific goal in mind. Even if it's, you know, trying to develop models to improve a fantasy team. I don't do fantasy. I don't gamble. I'm asked about that quite a lot, and I wish I had better insight. But just start where your passion is. Try to find some data and just try to recreate some of the things that you've heard about and see if they're true, and if you can demonstrate that they're true in data. And then you can kind of branch out from there.
Yeah, I don't gamble either, but you know, since I started doing these interviews with our speakers, that Supreme Court ruling came out allowing for gambling in states, and it occurred that that might actually be a big boost for sports analytics professionals long term. But that's a whole other subject. So, Laura, you mentioned Informs as a good website to start off with. What are some other reading suggestions you might have, whether it be blogs, websites, books? Any podcasts you listen to, anything like that?
Oh, that's a great question. I thought of a couple of my favorite books that I read recently. One is Kathy O'Neill's Weapons of Math Destruction. Okay. I really enjoyed that. I think it is such a good job of promoting analytics, but then also promoting using analytical methods wisely and, you know, validation and all these other ideas that we want people to think about when they build good models and apply them. And she talks a lot about public sector research, like sentencing decisions and the analytics that can go into that. So it was really right up my alley. Another book, which isn't really operations research based, but I thought was one of my favorite mathy books, is called How Not to Be Wrong by Jordan Ellenberg, who's one of my colleagues at Wisconsin, who's a math professor. And there's some sports discussions in there. He and I talk about sports a lot. So that I think is a hook there. And it's just a really great book about how to think in a mathematical way and how you kind of view the world through that lens of math and ways you can be really wrong or correct other people who are really wrong about how they're viewing things.
Thank you. Great suggestions. So, Laura, I know that you're all over the internet. I mentioned your bracketology blog before. I know you've got another one, and yep. You're active on Twitter. Tell our audience how people can connect with you, find you on social media, on the web.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Laura Albert, PhD, and my blogs are Punk Rock Operations Research and Badger Bracketology.
All right, great. My guest today has been Laura Albert of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Laura will deliver a talk titled Forecasting the College Football Playoff Using Markov Chains. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Laura.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, and thank you for listening today. Again, the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, June 21st at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details, and make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @analyticsconf. Thanks for listening.